Thanks, Trish. Good morning. You're listening to News Talk Breakfast with Kieran Cuddihy and Andrea Gilligan on Thursday, the 6th of August. We have a busy show to come between 9 and 9, Kieran.
We do. A vaccine for COVID-19. It's likely as early as 2021. It's according to Dr. Anthony Fauci, the top US infectious disease expert. At 7:40, we're going to find out why he is so optimistic.
Also, suspects in sexual assault cases could now be entitled to anonymity. It's part of this major new reform that's been announced and how these kind of cases are handled. Well, the Justice Minister, Hallam McEntee, she'll be joining us at around just after 8 o'clock this morning to tell us if she's going to implement the recommendations that are contained in this new report that's been published today.
A lot of businesses struggling. We know at the moment, not all small, some big ones too. 1,400 redundancies targeted at Bank of Ireland, for example, but it's booming in other parts of the economy. Some seaside towns, for example. We're going to speak to some of them in about 10 minutes' time.
Also, 10 to 8 this morning, the Association of Secondary School Teachers of Ireland, the ASTI trade union, they're going to be reacting to the call for mandatory face masks in schools, something that we heard the former HSE Director General, Tony O'Brien, telling us about here on News Talk Breakfast yesterday morning. Really interesting suggestion, Kieran. What's your take?
Like, my position on this is my position on face masks in general. I'm just so reluctant to make them mandatory anywhere. And I understand all of the arguments and all of the rationale. And I think Tony O'Brien is right when he says the wind is blowing in that direction and we're going to get to a point where they'll be made mandatory. I cannot see how secondary school students are going to go back to school not wearing face masks. I think that is absolutely going to happen. But it's not something I'm entirely happy about. And I know people will text in and say, listen, if it saves lives, surely we have to do it. And I understand and I accept that argument on one level. But on another level, we talk about a vaccine possibly being available next year. The other possibility is we never get a vaccine. There's never a vaccine for COVID-19. There's never a very effective treatment and we have to learn to live with it. Yeah. No one seems to really contemplate that. We say it all the time, but no one contemplates it. Because if you're contemplating that and you're making masks mandatory in secondary school, how do you ever put the toothpaste back in the tube? Essentially, you're saying that we're going to live in a society where 13-year-olds going off to their first day in secondary school, nervous and all as they are going to have to spend the entire day with their face covered. Yeah. I don't think it's the society I want to live in.
No,
accepting all the counter arguments, it's not the society I want to live in.
No, I don't think any of us do. And I thought it was interesting actually to hear Tony O'Brien telling us yesterday, you know, about the idea that you're going to have a lot of kids, particularly secondary school students, that are going to get on the school bus to go into school, put on the face mask, take it off when they arrive in school, put it back on to go into the shop at lunchtime, back off again, back on the bus. And that his suggestion that it would be better maybe to keep it on.
Tony O'Brien is right. We are going to get to that point. We're undoubtedly going to get to a point in the next week or two where they're going to announce mandatory face masks in secondary school. He's absolutely right. I'm just saying I'm not really comfortable with it.
Well, fair point. Well, look, do you agree with Kieran on this? Are you concerned? Do you think should we be wearing masks now in most public places for, look, maybe years to come potentially? Let us know here on News Talk Breakfast this morning, 53106 at a cost of 30 cents. You can also get us on Twitter too, at @BreakfastNT.
Now we turn our attention back though to Beirut at 8 minutes past seven. The death toll still standing officially at 135 people, though climbing higher with each passing hour. Angel Vorna is a freelance TV presenter and journalist and foreign policy based in the city. People will remember we spoke to Angel yesterday. Angel, what is the latest from the Lebanese capital this morning?
Well, the number of deaths has risen. Number of injured people has increased as well. There are still reports that people buried under the debris. Volunteers have started to broom the streets in many parts of the city, a mammoth task. The Bangladeshi migrant workers we've seen also being deployed to clean the streets. We also saw that the Lebanese army soldiers early this morning were deputed on in certain areas where the impact has been large. They're basically closing the roads so the roads can be cleaned. Hospitals are under immense pressure. We went to a leading hospital this morning and found out that actually they had 600 patients and they have none now because the hospital was destroyed as well. So they've had to refer cases elsewhere. 17 of their patients died along with 4 nurses. So it's still a pretty grim situation. But the important piece of news that I'd like to share here is that a lot of institutions have opened their own sort of funding accounts where people from across the world could send help. For instance, this hospital that I visited this morning is called St. George Hospital, St. George University Hospital.
Yeah.
They've opened, you know, I think online a portal where people could visit if they wanted to donate. Other than that, essentially, there's still sort of panic in the air. I tried to go to the port, but the security forces didn't let me. I could get to the hospitals because my foot is injured, so I could say that I wanted to show myself to the doctors. It's still pretty tense. Nobody's even talking about what to do with, you know, how are we going to start rebuilding the homes, and hundreds of thousands of homes have been destroyed.
Yeah, and I see a footage on the TV in front of me here of workers from France and supplies from France already on their way, and you'd imagine a lot more of that will be needed in the coming weeks. Has the blame game started there? Has the finger pointing begun?
Well, finger pointing, we think it's going to pick up in a day or so. Now, the cabinet was supposed to meet today, but that's been postponed. I've learned that the French President Macron is expected to visit today, and that may be the reason that the cabinet is not happening today. But as and when that happens, there will be a lot of quarreling, a lot of bickering, and blame game will then begin. At the moment, the political entities here are not blaming each other, not directly at least, but the messaging is that somebody clearly is at fault, because why in the world was ammonium nitrate, such huge amounts of ammonium nitrate, stored next to, stored in a warehouse, which is so close to neighborhoods which are inhabited by hundreds of thousands of people?
Yeah.
So lots of questions being asked, but that sort of rhetoric and bickering that we're used to seeing, you know, is expected to start soon, but it hasn't yet.
All right. Angela Vorna, freelance TV presenter and journalist on foreign policy. Thank you for your time. Really legitimate questions there, Andrea. You can't store ammonium nitrate here because of a European directive anywhere close to where people live. Yet it's stored slap bang in the middle of Beirut. It seems remarkable.